Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu, kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale kalapo kondwela leloeka tutikumbukila kweta chokela amai kuvutika mutima koma zoti tazisoa ni maona misozi masomwake ni mavuto abale ni mavuto.
Good day, morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. This Saturday, the 30th of May, 2015. Welcome to the show, everybody, from wherever you are listening us from. It's 10 a.m. in Texas, and it's, I believe, 4 p.m. or 1600 in the UK, 1700 in Zambia, and from whichever part of the country or the world that you are listening us from. We are very privileged and honored on this program this morning from Texas to have Mr. Dos Mangaliso. He's the lead consultant at the Pan AF Consultancy, and he's going to be talking to us about the work of the organization and what they do in sub-Saharan Africa and explaining all those kinds of things. Mr. Mangaliso, good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Kama. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Yes, you're welcome. All right. Everybody listening to us, thank you for calling in. Welcome to all my colleagues and everybody joining us from different parts of the world. Let me mention here that, like we always say on this show, if you have an interesting topic and you want to recommend for us to address it or have the guest on this, you are welcome to do that. Thanks to our friend and a regular contributor to this show, Namunji, who introduced me to Mr. Mangaliso. Let me begin by asking, can you tell us about PANAF Consultancy? When was it established, and what's your assessment of the performance to date?
Well, we established the PANAF Consultancy officially in 2010 in Monrovia, Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
It was after a few years of having traveled to a few different places around the continent of Africa, and I started to see some recurring themes. No matter which region we were in, no matter which country we went to, some of the themes were recurring in terms of opportunities, different possibilities. They are recurring throughout each region and throughout each country that I was visiting. And so I realized that some of the best ways to address some of these themes may just be to establish a consultancy that deals with addressing some of these issues. Because many people outside of the continent are not aware of the potential of the continent and what the continent has to offer. And many people within the continent are not aware of the potential that they have and the potential that they have to interact with other people within the continent and the diaspora. To answer your question about my assessment of the performance, well, I cannot assess our performance without looking at the reality of the circumstances around the continent now.
Okay.
With the circumstances of the continent being what they are in terms of certain challenges that must need to be addressed, I am the harshest critic that you probably will find for the PANAF Consultancy. And I say all of that to say that I don't believe that our consultancy or any organization with a similar purpose is living up to the standard that we need to live up to, and we won't be living up to that until we start to truly, truly make headway with some of these issues that we are facing around the continent. So I appreciate the effort of the people that we work with, the things that the consultancy has been doing, but it's not enough. It's never enough given the circumstances that we face as an African people.
Okay. How many countries are you actively operating in, and what influenced your choice of those countries that you are working in?
Well, to give a count in terms of countries, I don't know if that would better serve your question. It's best to identify the regions that we are operating in. We are operating in four of the five continental regions now, in terms of the five regions on the continent of Africa.
Yeah.
We have a goal to also operate in the fifth region, which is the northern region, in addition to the east, west, central, and southern region.
Okay.
And we cannot forget about that sixth region of Africa, the African diaspora, all Africans in various parts of the world outside of the continent. So our aim is to be in all six regions of Africa, the five geographic regions of the African continent, and that very, very, very important sixth region, which is that outstanding region outside of the continent.
Let's discuss the business and investment portfolios that you consult or give advice on. What are these specific areas? And also help us understand why you have chosen to work in those areas specifically.
Well, in terms of business and investment sectors, we have no limits. We deal with people who may be as small as a young man in the village trying to market the honey that he's harvested through his honeybee operation in the cities near his village, as well as major mining operations or interest in major iron ore mining operations, for instance, with potential investors in mining coming from some of the manufacturing nations of the world. So we are a cross-sectional organization, and we do our best to not neglect any area of business and investment opportunities for Africa. The reason being is that we seek the development of the continent and the progress of the continent in its totality, not just in a few different areas. Traditionally, I think you may be aware of this, people have focused on the mining sector of Africa and some of the natural resources. And we definitely keep those in mind, but there are underdeveloped sectors in which business and investment opportunities exist around the continent, such as the agricultural sector, environmental sector, energy sector, so on and so forth. The reason why we want to be a cross-sectional consultancy is precisely what I said a moment ago, is that we want the development of the continent in its totality. We don't only deal with business and investment opportunities as well. I think I should add this now. Case in point, earlier this year, we were attempting to place certain scholars from around the continent in different programs throughout the world, and which completing those programs, they would be more equipped or better equipped to come back to the continent and contribute to its development. We do things like that as well. Next year, we endeavor to take some of the students that are studying outside of Africa and place them in internship positions in each of the regions of Africa. So it's not just a business and investment consultancy, but we do put great emphasis on that. We deal with a multitude of things, education, healthcare, so on and so forth.
The interesting thing is, Margariso, that what you have mentioned here is that you deal with, let me say, as large as multinationals, like to use your expression, like to that young person in the village who's trying to do some little project. I want you to walk us through the process of that young person. How do they get to hear about the PANAF consultancy, and what is the process? How would you help them? How would you advise them how to go about the area in which they need your help?
Well, that is the probably the challenging aspect of what we do, which is the networking and dealing with a human network of people. Someone in an obscure part of Africa wouldn't be able to find out about us, but we make it our priority to find out about them. I found, based on my experiences traveling around the world, there's virtually nothing that Africa has that the world does not want. And to be quite candid, the world cannot exist without what Africa is supplying to the world now. All of the structures that you see around the world, the buildings, all of the development that you see in the developed nations of the world must take place with natural resources and raw materials that are coming from Africa. If you look at the number in terms of exports of iron ore, copper ore, chrome, so on and so forth from Central and Southern Africa, you'll understand exactly what I mean. With that understanding, we operate, we make sure that we don't overlook any possibility. And so we know that there is a push now for more organic food, a food that is more healthy, right? And a healthier diet requires food that is grown without some of the chemicals that you find in most of the food in the United States or Western Europe now. Then that impresses us to say, well, we have quite a few different options for supplying organic food to markets. We have honey, for instance. We have still livestock that is grown and fed nothing but grass. So we operate with that understanding in mind that there's always an opportunity for some aspect of whatever is being done in Africa to be enhanced. Take, for instance, mud bricks. If you go around Africa, you'll find many structures in many of the African countries constructed with mud bricks. Now, if you go to certain websites of certain companies in Australia, you'll find that they, too, are having a push to use more organic materials than mud bricks, being one of those for construction. Now, the challenge that we have in Africa is not that there's not enough mud to make mud bricks. If anything, we have the best soil in the world all around the continent of Africa. The technology to enhance the mud brick is not there. And when I mention technology, I don't mean in terms of equipment and material that is only produced or can only be afforded by those of developed nations. I mean the intellectual technology in terms of thinking and using our creativity to make a stronger mud brick. And so that's, I don't know if I've answered your question enough or if you're satisfied, but that's the paradigm that we operate with. And that makes it a bit easy in terms of identifying different sectors or those small sectors, but actually getting to those, you have communication issues, so on and so forth, and that's just part of what we do. You know.
Excellent. You're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. We're talking to Mr. Dos Mangaliso, the lead consultant at the PANAF Consultancy. Their website is ZPANA, okay, thepanafcon.com. Or you can just Google PAN-AF Consultancy, and it will come up. A lot of things that they're doing in sub-Saharan Africa. This is what I like it when you say you use the expression about working with Africa and also considering the sixth region of Africa, which is the diaspora. Most people don't look at it that way. Before I go to my colleagues and those listening, if you wish to ask a question, you can post it on our Facebook page, Zambia Block Talk Radio, or on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio. One of your key objectives, you've already probably alluded to it, is connecting global entities to African markets. These global entities, Mangaliso, which regions of the world would you say have shown the greatest interest? North America, Asia, South America, Russia, Europe. How would you gauge those regions?
Well, let me tell you this, and Kama, I really, really appreciate that question. And as I answer it, I hope you'll understand why I appreciate that question. I think that no one should be under any illusion. Every region of the world is at this point exploring opportunities for gain and profit in terms of investment and business opportunities in Africa, every region of the world. Now, there is an influx at this point of people coming from the manufacturing nations of Asia, particularly from China, and due to the capital resources that they have in the Arab nations of the world, but the lack of fertile soil and the need for food, you find an influx of those coming from the Arab nations of the world, but historically they have been here. I think that any elementary level historian knows the history of the Arab slave trade. But now you see them coming in this modern era because they need food. The manufacturing nations of the world need raw materials as well as food because they have population problems. I shouldn't say population problems, but they have population challenges in the Asian nations of the world, and they're no longer having enough soil to produce the food that they need. So they also are seeking land development opportunities to invest in agriculture.
Uh-huh.
But the direct answer to your question is the influx now is coming from Asian nations, particularly China, and there is regularly increasing numbers of Arabs exploring opportunities for investment in Africa. Before you go on, I want to say this too. Those are the ones that are expressing greatest interest in Africa at this time. And I said there are people from every region of the world that are looking to invest in Africa now or looking for business opportunities in Africa now. What you find absent, and it is very, very sad to say, but it is our responsibility as the PANAF consultancy to change this. The group of people that you find absent are those from African America. And I'm talking about the descendants of slaves in America, those that you find in affluent positions or that have experienced a level of success. You noticeably find them absent from the landscape here. If you go to any nation in Africa now, you're going to see people from what is referred to as the Middle East, people from Asia, people from Europe, people even from South America, people from North America. But you won't find the descendants of this continent who have been trained, who have received skill, who do have the capital resources to invest here. You won't find their presence like I think and like we believe that they should, like we should find their presence. Now, that's not to say that there are none. There are no absolutes, of course. But you do not see them as noticeably as you would think that we would. And that is, I think, the aim, one of the aims of the Pan-Af Consultancy. And I'm hoping that Zambia Blog Talk Radio will take it up on their mantle as well to reach that skilled population there in America of African descendants. Leave the media images aside, all right, because I can already sense certain callers or people sending messages in talking about these things in terms of African America's oppression of Africa and how they don't see. I'm talking about those who are serious and committed to their business endeavors.
Yes.
Those who are in Black Enterprise Magazine's top 100 African American businesses. Those individuals who are wise enough to understand the potential and the opportunities that lie before them when given an image of proper places to invest in. Those are the ones we need to target. Those are the ones we need to start reforming the image of Africa for.
How, before I allow my colleagues to come in here, because I know the last point you just made, I'm sure it has just triggered a lot of, which can trigger a lot of discussion, just that one point. In your work with Pan-Af Consultancies, Mangaliso, how is the African diaspora, how has it performed? In, let's say in the past decade, how have we performed?
Well, I think the statisticians would be able to give you precise answers to that question. But in terms of someone who is just observing and basing his knowledge on experiences and traveling and what I see here on the continent that I've read, I think it was in 2011 I read an article online, and the title of the article was something like "The Brain Drain of Africa Costs Africa $2 billion a Year." All right. If we had people going out of the continent, or greener pastures, as some say, and I don't necessarily agree that pastures are always greener outside. I've never seen land as fertile as Africa anyway. But if we had people going out, I think that we need to do better as a people, whether they are forced out or whether they willingly go out for some success. I don't condemn anyone for leaving, for improving themselves and making progress.
Yes.
But I do think that it is a great atrocity to not take that knowledge and then use it for the improvement of the place in which you have come from. For people that understand the history of the world, you see that Moses, the irony of the situation is he was trained in Africa, and then he took everything that he learned and everything that he gained while being trained by Africans and developed the Hebrew people. Again, right?
Wow.
Despite the fact that he was trained and he was the descendant of slaves in Africa, or people that were enslaved in Africa, when he got into the position that he got into in terms of being outside or going back to Canaan, he used that which he had gained while outside of his homeland to develop or help his people and then move back to their homeland for the development of their homeland. So I believe that the diaspora has a great responsibility, and I believe that we need to make sure that the diaspora lives up to that responsibility.
That's right. You know, those that have called in, if you wish to ask Ms. Mangaliso a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad so that I know that you wish to make a comment. I'm going to the phone lines now, and I'll be also checking some questions or comments on social media, Facebook. Those that would like to send a message or comment, please, you can post your question or comment to our Facebook page, Zambia Block Talk Radio, and I'll read it out to Mr. Simandaliso, who is our guest this morning. Okay, let me go to is it Minnesota? Titus, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I'd like to commend what Mr. Simangaliso is doing. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. The question I had was where he talked about genetically modified foods and with China in particular growing. What is being done or what can be done from the African nations to try and slow down that? Right, from the health point of view, despite the economic cost, secondly, bringing it back here with the African Americans that he identified, how can the equation be changed? Because some of the free foods that are being given out or the allocations of the food stamps are not made for organic foods. So how can that equation be changed from a point of view of his organization?
Well, thank you for your question, sir. I appreciate that. When it comes to things like genetically manufactured food, and you're starting to see, unfortunately, some of those things creep into certain markets in Africa. With respect to Africa's changing of these things, our people are people that pay great attention to leadership. And when I say leadership, I don't mean simply those that are in political positions or those that are running leftover colonial structures of government. I mean those that are prominent in communities, particularly those that are religious leaders in communities throughout Africa. Religious leaders wield an enormous amount of power. When you talk about something that is becoming day by day an uphill battle, like genetically manufactured food, and desire to produce GM food, and the challenge of competing with GM food in terms of agricultural production. We have two things that need to be addressed. One, we need to make sure that our people, our local farmers, and even those commercial farmers that are African, because you got a lot of commercial farmers that come from outside of the continent that really are not concerned about Africa. They're only concerned about profits. We have to make sure that they are educated on the dangers of such and resist the urge, number one. Two, they have to be educated in understanding the kind of people that we are from which we have come. Africa is a place that you never really have to replant anything. Think it is going to grow. I was fascinated the other day as my wife showed me, you see, a place where we had thrown some avocado seeds. No planting, just discarded them in the yard. Now something has sprouted there. And we didn't dig and plant it. It just was on the ground there, and this is what happens. This is the value of African soil. In terms of competing on the world market, I think that is the crux of your question. The world is starting to see the dangers of genetically manufactured food, right? The world is starting to see that, and they're starting to slowly, be a push for more organic food.
If
we have the staying power at this point to continue to grow food and develop crops production the right way, eventually the world is going to turn around and say, this is what we need more of. It is just like Greenpeace and the efforts of Al Gore now. Decades ago, the U.S. and all of the quote-unquote developed nations of the world were polluting the air as much as Chinese factories are polluting the air now. But now you see that there has been an incredible shift in how things are done, and they are very much concerned about the ozone layer and protecting the environment. It will come back around because that's just the way nature works. You cannot abuse nature for too long before you realize you have abused yourself.
Yeah, that's profound. Continue with our questions, our discussion. We will also talk about PANAF's work consultancy in organizing tour opportunities for clients both abroad and within the nation. Let's go to Canada. Roger, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, and as Taita says, I couldn't pronounce your name, but I...
Smangaliso.
You can shorten it just by saying Smangaliso. Smanga is enough.
Smanga, Smanga. It sounds like a Tonga or a Lord's name. Are you... Okay.
Sorry, what's your
question? Let's start with the black, our friend, the African American, not taking a lead into investment into Africa. I'm not sure what the reason is, but we have our own. We're going to hear from him. He's going to speak up his words with that. But the question is, what can we do to potential? The potential of first and foremost Africa, because we don't want them to come there because they are sorry for us, but for Africa, but we want them to come to Africa because there's some potential in Africa and they could do very well. Number two, I don't know how long we have been in Zambia, Manga, but how much are you taking development outside Lusaka? How much are you doing about that? That's a while ago before you came. We had a couple here who are in, I wouldn't call it a rural area, but it is rural because there is no development there. How much is your weight going into the remotest part of Zambia or the stations in Lusaka?
All right, thank you for your question. It was a bit staticky, but I'll do my best to answer. I think it is in two parts. One, correct me if I'm wrong, in Kala, he's asking about best way or what we feel the best way to make a connection with the African American population is. And
that's
two,
correct.
He's asking
that's
about,
correct.
Yeah, the second question, he's asking about how much work we're doing with respect to Zambia outside of Lusaka.
That's great.
Okay, the first question, in terms of making the connection with brothers and sisters in the African-American world, is very important. Number one, it's critical. And not only when I say African-America, I don't mean just Africans descendants of slaves in the United States. I also mean descendants of slaves in some of the Southern South American countries, like Brazil, for instance, which has the largest population in the world of African descendants. There's only one country in Africa, that being Nigeria, which has a larger population of African people than Brazil, which has 85 million African descendants. There is a strategy that we must employ, which is called using our brain. everybody on both sides of the Atlantic must use their brains. Number one, we know that it has been to the advantage of certain non-African countries, certain non-African people, to have a division of African people. African descendants in the United States that are calling themselves African American, African descendants in South America that believe they are Brazilian or Colombian or whatnot, they were never, or their ancestors were never taken there to be part of the whole society. Their ancestors were taken there to detract from Africa and to build up the whole society. And in order to have something like that and sustain it, you've got to first attack the mind. I believe there's an Ethiopian film director by the name of Haile Gerima who said the first thing that European conquerors or colonizers had to do before they could take one jot or tittle of Africa was to take over the mind. So they would have eventually run out of ammunition. They didn't have enough muscle in terms of gunpowder to just come in and blow up everything. They had to first capture the mind. So it is now our responsibility to uncapture the mind. Oh. And the way to uncapture the mind is not to beat it out of someone, but to use logic and reason. Those of us that are enlightened, whether you be from African America or you be from mainland Africa, you should feel a responsibility when you're in those situations and you're dealing with African American who is resisting in whatever form he or she is resisting a connection to the continent. You should understand the psychology there. And the best way to show him or her the advantage of connecting with the continent of Africa is to show the beauty of Africa, because he or she has been given an impression of Africa since the time that they were old enough to comprehend what they were seeing. They have been given an impression of Africa which makes them believe that there's nothing valuable about the continent of Africa. So the best way to start to change that is to present to him or her that side of Africa which we know is the beautiful side. Let me try to make this live in layman's terms. If I am in the United States and I am from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, a nation that has suffered tremendously in terms of Belgian colonization, in terms of kleptocratic rule by those that were put in power by the American CIA, and now it is trying to reestablish itself. I'm not going to go to the United States and study there and began to talk to people about all of the tumultuous times that the Democratic Republic of the Congo has had. I'm going to talk to them about the natural resources that DRC produces. I'm going to talk to them about the wealth and the ground of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which, all told, is more than three times the GDP of America and Western Europe combined. I'm going to talk to them about the beauty of Africa, not some exaggerated beauty or that which we want it to be. I'm going to talk to them about the real value. If I'm coming from, even if I'm not coming from Zambia, I'm going to tell them how Zambia is always one of the top 10 producers of copper, and that how half a billion to $1 billion of copper is exported from Zambia every day. I'm going to tell them about the accessibility of diamonds and gold in some of the West African nations, like Liberia and Sierra Leone. I believe that these things, in a calculated manner, in an intelligent conversation, will start to reform the minds of certain people. That's much more valuable than simply telling them, oh, you don't know anything, or you're ignorant, you sound ignorant, or these things which we have done for far too long. Someone who's studying real estate or property management in Black America or African America. If you talk to them and tell them, well, when you finish studying and you graduate from your master's program, you're going to have a great challenge of finding work because the markets in the U.S. are flooded. You have 350 million people in the United States, and you're going to have to really work very hard in your basement until you're able to get some progress in 5, even 10 years maybe. But if you tell them about a place like Zambia, which is underpopulated, which has, I believe, over 700,000 square kilometers of land, but only 14 million people, that's going to show them that, hey, there is something around the continent or in the continent that I need to at least start to read more about, or at least maybe take a trip and see, because from what I'm being told, I won't have to struggle if I go to some of these places in Africa that have land, but land that's undeveloped, and I'm studying how to develop property or how to manage property. I hope that makes sense. In terms of the second question about what we're doing outside of Lusaka, I don't know if you've had a chance to take a look at our brochure about our upcoming business and investment tour. We're only spending about 2 full days in Lusaka itself. The rest of the time that we're touring around Zambia is outside of Lusaka. People are going to fly in and be in the country by July 6th. By July 8th, we'll be in Solwezi in the northwestern province. From there, we'll be in the Copper Belt region in Ndola, where if you look at the investment tour and the schedule of the tour, we're going to areas that are not urban areas, and we're definitely not spending a lot of time in Lusaka. There is a provision in the tour or in the tour agenda for investment opportunities in Lusaka with respect to telecommunications and waste management, and we're definitely going to deal with those. But most of the investment opportunities and business opportunities we are dealing with are in those other regions of Zambia outside of Lusaka. I talked with the Honorable Enoch Kavendele last month, at the beginning of last month, about including his Northwestern Rail project, which is going to link Zambia to the Atlantic Ocean through Angola, on our tour. And he was certainly in favor of it. He welcomed us. He made the suggestion, though, that a presentation be given in Lusaka, in which he met a very, very strong rejection of that idea on my part, because that does not give someone the true image of the possibility for investing, like taking the group there to Solwezi in Northwestern Province.
Smagadiso, let's make a turn around here as our time is winding up. I would like to allow one or two more questions. I want Dr. Patrick to comment and allow Zebron too. But let's zero in on something very big, important, that is coming up. There is a tour that PANAF is doing to Zambia. Talk to us about that. Give us the dates and how is it? How are these tours arranged?
Okay, thank you so much. The tour is from July 6th to July 18th this year. The tour arrangement is basically going to cover certain sectors. Directly and indirectly, people will learn about other investment and business opportunities in other sectors. But the tour is going to cover, we're emphasizing agriculture / agribusiness, that is going to include aquaculture or growing crops and water, certain water products. in terms of livestock, fisheries, and wildlife. Mining and mineral processing. An emphasis must be placed on the mineral processing.
Okay.
Because we, for centuries now, have done quite a bit of mining, but we need to focus on the processing because mineral processing improves the mineral, enhances the economy by sending out a processed mineral as opposed to a raw material, and it would create jobs. Energy and infrastructure, as I mentioned, rail development is included in that infrastructure. Construction, manufacturing, natural resources, wildlife, and telecommunication. We're going to really focus people's attention while here, or show people the excellent opportunities that they had if they were to come here and invest in Zambia, or maybe not even just an investment, but enter into a business relationship with some of the established companies, established entities here already. The profitable nature of such an investment. It's going to combine this information. It's going to combine this information with what Zambia has to offer in terms of tourism, which is some of the greatest tourism in the world. I don't know if many of your listeners have actually been to Zambia, but this is what people have seen on National Geographic, on the Discovery Channel. We're going to take them to some of those places, particularly South Luangwa National Park, which you find many, many scenes on the National Geographic Channel and the Discovery Channel that are taken directly from this park. People are going to go there and be able to experience those. They're going to see the largest man-made lake in the world in Lake Bariba. So it's going to be a well-packed tour that gives people quite a bit of information on their business and investment opportunities, gives them an opportunity to even start business and investment while on the tour, and at the same time enjoy what some have referred to as God's sanctuary here in Zambia's natural habitat.
Okay. If people are interested or they want to get information about this, can you please give out that contact information?
Right. They can email us at info@pans.com. Go to our website, as you said earlier, www.thepanafcon.com. That's PHETANASCON.com. Or they can call us at country code 260-97-209-4278. You mentioned Namunji earlier. Namunji is a godsend because she is really, really doing quite a bit to help us stateside. And so if someone wanted to talk to someone there in the United States, they can also contact us, and we could via email or the website, or go to our Facebook page, the PANAF Consultancy, and we could connect with Namunji if they wanted to contact her by phone.
All right, excellent. Okay, we'll get back to that just before we conclude our show. We have about 11, 10 minutes remaining here. Let me allow Dr. Patrick to make his comments or ask any questions that he might have. Next week, I'm working on trying to get somebody, the people who are working behind the scenes. Most of you know Dr. Kaunda made that prayer or declaration of blessing or releasing Zambia from whatever that is. It sounded too Pentecostal to me, and I know Zambians get excited about Pentecostalism. I'm Pentecostal by theology, but the practices are questionable in my opinion. That's my opinion. So I'm trying to get the people behind that so that we can talk about it. I'm not excited as the whole nation is, Roger. I would like to get to the bottom of things and understand what is going on. Pronouncements to me mean nothing. Dr. Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan. Mengeliso, my brother, I have a comment and a request, and then a question. The comment and request is, you had mentioned in the beginning of your presentation You said descendants from slaves in America. What I would like you to do is, instead of saying descendants from slaves in America, how about descendants from kings and queens in Africa? That way we have our true root from where we began. Or, as you mentioned later on in your presentation, you said African descendants. I would add to that African descendants living in the United States or Europe or Australia or Canada. That's my thing that I always, whenever I hear someone say descendants from slaves, I say, no. Descendants from kings and queens in Africa. Now to my question. When in your consultancy, do you do what I call drill down consultancy for good guidance? And what I mean by that is, in the previous program, and Nathan mentioned it, Roger interviewed a husband and wife who opened up a health clinic. And in doing so, I asked the question about is there, what type of electricity do you have? And the follow-up question to that, because she was thinking in terms, or they were thinking in terms of the living conditions in the area in Masaiti district. What I meant was, do you have the electricity, because they're opening up a health clinic, do you have a continuous flow of electricity that would assure that the medicines they use don't go bad, or the diagnostic equipment that they use do not become inoperative and therefore harm or injure the patients? So my drill down question is, when you provide consultancy to individuals and companies, do you keep digging down to make sure that they have things in place in order to be long standing?
Okay, Dr. Patrick, thank you so much for your comment and your question. Let me do my best to address both. In terms of referring to us as descendants from kings and queens in Africa, that poetic language is very nice. We enjoy that, and I have no problem with that. The reality, though, is that even those that were, if you say descended from Africa, not everyone came from the royal family, and not everyone that was sent across the Atlantic came from the royal family. In addition to that, the author said, and the author's name escapes me now, but he said, African Americans have been history's most humiliated people. And that is very painful, being an African American myself, having grown up in Flint, Michigan, of all places. That's very painful. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but it is a pill that we must swallow. And we must acknowledge the tragic, the myth of the missing. And so, the anchoring, or the reference point, is to the continent of Africa, as you rightly have said. And we must do better in terms of our language and how we look at ourselves in a historical context. But at the same time, we must not ignore the reality of our suffering, because simply ignoring it or pretending like it did not happen is not going to make us progress to where we need to progress. It's sort of like with the challenge of AIDS and HIV in the Republic of South Africa and in Kenya. And I love South Africa. You know, everyone who knows me knows this, but for all intents and purposes, there's been a tremendous amount of denial of the reality of the problem there for the last 10 years or so. And we've got to get over that. So I don't have any problem saying that we are direct descendants of Africa, descendants of kings and queens in Africa. But I don't think that we should ignore the fact or try to use that reality to deny the other reality, and that we had to go through the vicious and the adverse treatment that we had to go through in slavery. In terms of your question about the very essentials in terms of our consultancy and how do we, I think you call it anchor down or round or something like that, we are very realistic. And
Mangalo, your line is fading. I don't know what's happening.
Okay, what was the last thing that was clear?
Okay, you are good now. I think just there was just one place where you didn't come out. Yeah.
In 2011, I was in Kaohsiung, Taiwan, to meet with the engineers at China Steel Corporation. China Steel Corporation is the number nine, or at that time was the number nine steel manufacturer in the world. And they were looking to discontinue purchasing iron ore, and they were looking for opportunities to mine iron ore directly. In that meeting, I was very candid, and I told them that what I was trying to sell them on was iron ore production in Liberia at the time. I was very candid in telling them the challenges that they deal with in terms of the bureaucracy there, as well as the infrastructural challenges in terms of roads, the absence of roads, the absence of rail, the absence of electricity. But particularly with the bureaucratic challenges, we definitely offer our services in an extended way. We wouldn't just say, okay, here, let us take you by helicopter, drop you down in the middle of Congo, and you get your diamonds or you get your copper ore from there. No, we definitely are with you every step of the process for every bit of the process that we can do with you.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Well, our time is up. Thank you, Dr. Patrick, for that question and a great discussion. Dos Mangaliso, who's the lead consultant of the PANAF consultancy. You want to get in touch with them, like he said. Let me give the number. The country code is 260. The number is 972-094-278. Or you can get in touch in the United States. I believe you can get in touch with Namunji at 1-469-471-2572. We do thank you for taking the time, my brother. This was good. We've learned quite a lot, and we shall be looking forward to discussing with you some more items. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Join me next week. I'm trying to find the people responsible for that proclamation or prayer Dr. Kaunda has made. We need to get to the bottom of things. Zambia has become very... It's open playing field for everybody. So like I said, I'm not excited by pronouncements. We need to get to the bottom of things. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.